Matter Valente and Valente.
Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith, representing the appellant and cross-respondent, Dan Valente. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
We have raised for you today here a very simple appeal that relies upon a very well-established case law, and that is that the award of permanent maintenance that was requested and awarded as a vehicle to allow the award of additional maintenance if circumstances change violates this court's decision in Rouleau and the Supreme Court's decision in Morgan. And it also violates the general principle that parties are entitled to a final resolution on divorce. That's our appeal. I really don't have much to add to that, and I'll go to the cross appeal unless the court has any questions about that.
Why did Rouleau say, or however you pronounce that correctly, why did it say we're not reaching the question of whether you could ever retain jurisdiction on a maintenance question?
I guess because they didn't have to. I mean, I think the only difference between this case and Rouleau, and I don't think it's one that it's a distinguishing difference, is that there was no maintenance at the beginning in that case. But I don't think that the court has the ability to award maintenance for a particular period of time and then say, and then I'm going to make it $1,000 or $100 or $1, just in case you need to come back. I mean, when you're getting divorced, you have as much right to know how long your maintenance obligation is going to be. And the parties obviously have the ability to come back if there is a substantial change of circumstances. But Judge Washington in this case was very clear that he knew how long he thought the maintenance should be. There wasn't going to be maintenance after that, and he was essentially called into error by this motion for reconsideration based on the inappropriate standard that you need to keep this open forever, so if my client wants to come in and get modification later, she can. Which goes, I think, to the cross appeal. The cross appeal is premised on facts, on this court finding facts that the trial court, in fact, rejected. And I want to make very clear, it's undisputed that Mrs. Valente has MS, but the trial court who heard the facts, who heard the doctors who had examined her, who heard this life care plan that's sort of like a tort-based theory for an additional award of property and maintenance, and he rejected that, and he rejected it in a particularly it's very apparent that he rejected it because it's like the worst thing that you can have on appeal. It's not just a matter of not making findings. He crossed out the findings.
Although the finding he crossed out was so-and-so testified high likelihood.
Well,
testified high likelihood. It's a little different than I declined to find there's any likelihood of.
We do seminars on what your findings are supposed to look like, and they don't just recite the findings. But he did cross out proposed findings that the wife's condition will not improve and is expected to decline, and that it is more probable than not that the wife's condition will deteriorate in the future. I mean, there was testimony to that effect, but it was quite clear by the way in which the court did this that it knew that was the basis for this potential for an award of either or also additional property and additional maintenance, and rejected that on evidence that, in fact, that might not be the case. And, in fact, crossed out the legal determination that Mrs. Valente could come in and ask for additional maintenance if she needed it before it terminated. But the reason that we were here on this appeal is Mr. Valente was really placed in an impossible situation. He had to appeal this now or know that there was a potential that his ex-wife could come in 20 years from now, because he's paying her $100 a month, and get a modification. And that's not appropriate under the general principle under Schaefer that we're entitled when we get divorced to a final resolution. Now, in this case, that means and we certainly concede that there's a possibility that there could be a substantial change of circumstances in either of these parties before the true maintenance award is terminated, and there would be modification.
How would you measure the change of circumstances, though, if you're 20 years down the line and say, you know, this is exactly what our physicians testified to way back, that it's likely to worsen and So is that really a change in circumstances if weren't anticipated?
I think the point of that is that that's a decision that should be made at that point, and there's an end date by which that will have to be made or not on modification. Something else that would probably happen in this case, if in fact that was the case, and we're certainly not suggesting that it should be, but something else that might happen under those circumstances is you could look and you could see Mrs. Valenti got all of the most of the cash assets. She had the ability to, she might have a significantly larger asset base by then too. That's something else that could be looked at. The fact that Mr. Valenti will likely retire and will not have the income stream that he has, but that's something that the parties, if they had to, and they shouldn't have to, can look at the time of modification. And that time for modification should and will end in this case under the trial court's findings 85 months after these parties are divorced. And that is all we are asking for, is that this court vacate those placeholder maintenance amounts, because these parties are entitled to a final resolution of their divorce. And if there are grounds for modifications, that will be addressed sometime in the 85 months after divorce. But Mr. Valenti is entitled to know that that's when the obligation is going to end. And I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I have a cold, so if my lips are moving and I'm not saying anything, that would explain that. Patricia Novotny on behalf of Fukiko Valente, who goes by Now. We are here to argue that the problem with the court's decision is that it is essentially arbitrary insofar as it gives the wife too little, and at a certain point for too short a time. And that's the essential problem. With respect to trying to track what was argued by counsel, in terms of Rouleau, I think you're precisely right, Judge Varela, in that the court there did not answer the question that appellate asserts that it did. It did not say there's an absolute prohibition on a placeholding sort of maintenance award. I would note that that is not the only reason the trial court here chose to extend the award for a lifetime. The court repeatedly said, I also thought there was a need to give more money.
At least it's to the $1,000 a month, but it's to the $100. Isn't it pretty clear when you read the, it's saying, now we're down to just holding on to this opportunity to move to Vegas?
Yeah, it gets harder. He does make a last comment about, I do think that I'm not so sure what the medical needs are going to be or how the insurance is going to be, but does get kind of bargained down to $100 at age 72, and it does become predominantly a placeholding award. I would say that there is nothing in the statute or in Washington case law that absolutely prohibits that.
Outside of parenting plans, is there any other area, though, where we've retained jurisdiction?
No, and I do think the interests of finality are prominent here. I would note my client did not ask for a lifetime. She had very well-reasoned requests that took her to Social Security at an amount that covers her expenses, and then also the life care plan, which funded her anticipated medical needs, which was, as a factual matter, as well-grounded as any kind of evidence I've ever seen in a trial court in anticipation of what is likely to happen to her based on what she's already going through. So,
but even if you can have a placeholder and it doesn't offend concerns with finality, don't you have to have a finding about what the likelihood is of future medical complications?
Well, do you have to have a finding? I mean, the court made...
You have to have more than a finding. You have to have multiple findings. You'd have to have a comprehensive decision from which this court could review this matter because of the lack of finality.
Well,
this is really problematic.
Well, you know, what was problematic here is that there was plentiful evidence. What was seemed to be difficult for the court to do was to, deal with the uncertainty of the future. This is where I was talking about. It was like the court was looking for beyond a reasonable doubt kind of standard. And that just wasn't possible. But again, have you ever put it another way? If the court had funded the life care plan, would you have a problem with that as being based on insufficient evidence? You know, no, there was plentiful evidence there.
Well, you might, given the fact that there were substantial assets awarded to your client as well, in terms of whether or not there's really a discretionary basis to do this.
Just a little bit more than half.
And that's a lot.
Well, sure.
Most of us don't have those kinds of assets with which to plan the rest of our lives, regardless of our condition. So you'd really have to show, it seems to me, with regard to, in other words, if it's not really reviewable, and we're up here on a peripheral issue, if you're going to have a life care case come up, it would be an interesting one. And I would suggest that you'd need substantial findings, given the other facts in this case.
Well, let me get to the maintenance issue more importantly. One, it doesn't have to be based on need alone, right? There's a whole list of statutory factors, all of which line up in this case in favor of a generous ward for a longer period of time, or at least one that's tied to reality here. What happens to Ms. Valente?
You have knowing that far out what's reality.
Well, I know that at age 62, when the maintenance, the substantial maintenance award ends, she's not going to be employable. She's not employable now, without regard to her medical condition. Right, she is the homemaker wife. A long marriage lines up. She can't go out and compete with him in terms of income in the market.
You're ignoring the assets. And
no, I'm not, Your Honor. I am comparing those two people head-to-head, which is the relevant comparison. It's a lot of money to me. You betcha. But to them, it's not so much. And that's the relevant comparison. Just look at Larson most recently out of this court. That's what the court was framing. It's not, wow, she has a lot of money as a result of this distribution. It's how much does she have relative to how much he has, and that's the relevant comparison here. Going forward, he's making 8 times more gross than she does every month. He didn't file a financial declaration and dispute that, but he's making that much more. That is an incredibly inequitable and disparate result. And the recent trend of cases since the statute was enacted, where you look at that complex mix of factors, encourages courts to place people in these positions where they've had a long marriage in relatively equal positions going forward. That did not happen here. Now, Ms. Valente's request to the trial court came closer to doing that, but it's still relatively modest given his, you know, incredible earning capacity and that he was awarded the goose that keeps laying these golden eggs. So the problem here is not, and I'm not going to focus too much on the life care plan because it's a novelty and it was, sort of took the trial court, you know, had a little trouble wrapping its head around it. But there's no disputing that once you look at give a fair consideration to the statutory factors for maintenance, again, they all militate towards a much more generous award here. And I think the fact that she got 4% more in gross assets from the parties is not, and you look at all the case law, you know, that in no way disentitles her to a just award of maintenance. And so we're asking the trial court, if there's to be a remand at all, we're asking the trial court to remand for the court to reconsider the award of maintenance. And again, what strikes me about this is that it's arbitrary. Why pick age 62 for her? She can't qualify then for a full Social Security benefit. What's going to change about her situation at age 62 that's going to make going from $10,000 to $1,000 reasonable?
Does she qualify for a Social Security claim on his Social Security at her age 62?
No, sir, she does not. And it's included in one of the exhibits. I mean, he has to reach, I think, age 65 or 60, 65. Certainly there's no finding about that. And I think, you know, that if the court needed that information or was making a mistaken assumption about that, that should be clarified. But it's an arbitrary point at which suddenly her income's going to drop by $9,000.
Let me ask a more abstract question. If you have a progressive disease situation, you have one doctor who says this is likely to worsen significantly, and 10 years out there's going to be physical therapy and increased medications and da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, another physician gets up and says, well, yeah, it's a progressive disease, but, you know, maybe a third of the people may end up having something. They might need to use a cane or might have some slight increase in weakness, but most people do pretty well. Is that enough level of certainty for the court to say, I'm going to award maintenance based on a projection of future medical costs?
I'd say absolutely, and here's one of the differences in that testimony, and I want to make a point about the court striking out the findings as well, is the doctors that testified on behalf of Ms. Valente were her doctors. They were testifying as to her condition. Dr. Lukowski was testifying epidemiologically. He was talking about most people, most of the time. Her doctors and the life care planner assessing all of that medical evidence was talking about what's likely to happen to her. And I think that was a distinction that was perhaps lost on the trial court, but there's plenty of, absolutely plenty of evidence to show that her condition is certainly going to worsen. But, you know, even without regard to that, she's unemployable. And she has enjoyed, they both have enjoyed a high standard of living. And you look at the kind of mix of maintenance cases, especially the more recent ones, the last decade or so, you know, these people should be placed in more comparable positions. And I think that, I don't think the court, again, in a fair consideration of the factors, I think the court missed that. And if I could just stick in a little point about the, oh, I'm running out of time. The court crossed out those findings because it wanted to preserve her ability to come back and modify.
One closing question.
I'm not sure it's successfully, but
you alluded to a potential remedy of a remand. When would you remand on a if a maintenance decision didn't satisfy the statutory factors, rather than just say it's bumped?
I'm sorry.
When do you if maintenance isn't supported by the statutory factors, what's the remedy on appeal? A remand or just saying the award of maintenance is reversed?
And in its
do-over.
Well, I think maintenance is justified here. I think that it was inadequate. So if the court is arbitrarily picking a time, this is where I think I cited Spreen to you as an example. If the court just arbitrarily picks a time that's at odds with the evidence, then you go over and you say, could you line these up a little better? And that's what we're asking the court to do. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
I'm going to try real hard not to re-argue Larson here. If we all had $70 million extra of somebody's separate property, we could take the rest of the day off. But this is not a Larson case. This is a case in which Ms. Valente got 80% of the liquid assets, over $2.5 million in cash. Mr. Valente, 60% of his award was essentially an income stream, and from the business that will be gone when he retires. And the trial court initially recognized that and recognized how long this maintenance award should be. And I want to point out one big difference between retaining jurisdiction in a parenting plan and retaining jurisdiction under circumstances like this, and that is that children turn age 18. And the situation here is that we have this leaves these parties essentially married. And regardless of what Larson says about putting people in roughly equal situations or Rockwell says about this, these parties were entitled to be divorced, and they were entitled to know what their ongoing circumstances were going to be. And the property distribution here and the maintenance award, the 85 months of maintenance, left Mrs. Valente with the ability to maintain her lifestyle, but allowed these parties to have their circumstances divided, which is what they're entitled to. Now, if we're going to create a way of looking at maintenance and property division that essentially says, you've been married 25 years, you got to stay married, then that's what you're going to be doing if you sent this case back for an award of additional maintenance. What you should be doing instead is recognizing, as this court has since Rouleau and as the Supreme Court did before that, that we're not going to have placeholder maintenance awards, so you can come in at the age of 70 or 75 or 80 and say, oh, by the way, I need more maintenance. We are all going to die of something. And some of us are going to die having become divorced. And some of us, like Mrs. Valente, are going to die having been divorced and being left with a multi-million dollar estate from which she can take care of herself for the rest of her life. But these parties are entitled to have finality with regard to their obligations to one another, and this decision does not provide them with finality. This court should vacate the placeholder provisions of this award, and I disagree that the $1,000 was intended as anything but a placeholder. There is no evidence in this case that Mrs. Valenti even needed this, and that it was clearly intended as a placeholder. The only basis for reconsideration in this case is, wait a minute, I might need more maintenance later. And what the trial court did as a result of that motion for reconsideration, which was wrong on the law, was cross out the thing that was right on the law, which was CP 89, crossed out the provision that the wife can come in and get a modification if her condition deteriorates. That was wrong as a matter of law, and the proper thing for this court to do is not to send this case back on remand, but to vacate the provision for placeholder maintenance, which is the only reason that this one entered.
If the court misperceives its authority, would remand be appropriate?
No. We'd certainly prefer that to affirmance, but I don't think remand is appropriate here. I think you should just vacate that because there was clearly no other basis for it. And these parties are entitled to have their divorce finalized. There's no reason to go back on remand. Thank you, Your Honors.
We'll take a brief recess at this time.